Today, my guest is Arthur Geese, here to discuss his review of Bayonetta 2. I'm Justin McElroy, and you're listening to Polygon's Quality Control. Arthur, welcome to the program again.
Hello.
So happy to have you.
Thank you.
Bayonetta 2.
It is a game that exists.
Your review of this, I'm going to go ahead and say, and I'm sorry to use this language, even though we do have an explicit tag, it caused quite the kerfuffle.
Kerfuffle is in the explicit language on iTunes. Yeah, some people talked about it, which I think either of us could have anticipated.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm here to represent everybody. So I'm here for all views, because I do think that there's an interesting discussion to be had there. But first, let's talk about just Bayonetta 2, the game-ass game. When you're the reviews editor at Polygon.
Uh-huh.
When you reviewed Bayonetta the First, which yes. I think is the proper title now, you raised some issues with the sexualization of the main character, Bayonetta.
I did.
So how do you, as a reviews editor, I should say, how do you decide, okay, I'm going to be the person who reviews this game? How does that assignment process work for you, especially with a game you have history with?
So first off, I do have history with it in that I played and finished the first Bayonetta, which not a lot of people on staff have. Second, I am pretty fluent in that genre. Like, I play character action games. I think people probably already gotten tired of me talking about Ninja Gaiden Black and stuff like that. Third, it's a matter of time. This is actually a fairly short turnaround for us, unfortunately. We didn't get a ton of time with it, although thankfully I was able to finish it a couple of days in advance of the deadline for it. Availability plus qualification plus interest, I think, all sort of add up to things that would lead me to assign something to someone, in this case myself. So that was a big part of it. And also, I don't find that having issues with depictions or content in a previous game in the series should be a disqualifier from someone to give their opinion on a game. Mm-hmm. I don't think that we should disqualify someone from reviewing a follow-up in a game for saying something was bad in the last one. Mm-hmm. And I think that in something like Bayonetta the First and in Bayonetta 2, clearly the depiction of the lead character that bears the game's name is an important part of the discussion about that game. So,
the most outstanding feature, I use that term literally, the most outstanding feature I would say about Bayonetta is just how sort of outlandish it all is. The action is outlandish, the her look is outlandish, the graphically, artistically, it's insane. A lot of games go for that, and in a lot of games it feels like overkill, and I've found, especially with Platinum, that they do a good job of like balancing that and making it palatable. What do you think the secret to that is?
I think consistency in a lot of ways is really important, because from top to bottom, Bayonetta 2, and like Bayonetta, has a very strongly defined aesthetic that it sticks to, and the sort of craziness of the violence and the overtopness of the characters fit in that world that they create. And so I think when you do that as a developer, I think it makes it easier to sort of process everything and say, okay, well, this boss takes up the entire screen. That makes sense in this game. Or it's two bosses that take up the entire screen. That makes sense in this game. I'm standing on top of a jet fighting enemies while the jet flies around. That makes sense because of the sort of context and world that they built here. So.
This is a Wii U exclusive, right?
Yes.
Is there any concession made to that, like to the special capabilities of the Wii U?
So the previous game had a one-button mode, more or less, a specific difficulty where basically hitting a button on the right side of the controller would cause crazy stuff to happen.
Hurting. It would do the hurting.
Yes, it would do the hurting. Which, if I remember correctly, was jokingly referred to by the press and the developers as a sort of giveaway to people who didn't want to have both hands occupied while they played Bayonetta, which...
I don't understand. Can you be more clear?
No, I think this is... I don't think we have an explicit tag on iTunes. Let's keep it that way. In this, there is a similar function in that if you use the touch screen on the Wii U gamepad, which shows the game, technically you can play on that screen, although I don't know that I would recommend it. It does a similar thing where you can tap on enemies to attack them to make the crazy stuff happen. And I think I appreciate that more this time around in a way because of a conversation that sprung up around it, which is that it makes the game more accessible to people who may have physical disabilities that make it difficult for them to play and enjoy games that require one to use the entirety of a controller, and that allows them to sort of experience the game in a way that they otherwise may not. So I can appreciate that in this. That's not the way that I played or would want to play, but it's there.
But like, do you use the touchscreen?
Yes, you tap on the touchscreen, but only in that mode. There's nothing else in the game that uses that.
So this could live on another console pretty easily. No sort of transition would need to be made.
Yeah, and I think that it's sort of been expressed that it was originally in production for other consoles, and that it could not, Sega could not take on the risk of publishing it by themselves, and would thus not continue to fund the game.
These character action games are typically pretty twitchy. Did that feel okay with the Wii U gamepad?
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that, actually. I expected that the gamepad might be a bad fit for it control-wise, but it's the biggest problem with the gamepad is the placement of the analog sticks relative to one another in the face buttons. And in this game, that's not really much of a concern because there are very few instances where you use the right thumbstick for anything. So the face buttons on the Wii U are fine. Eventually you get used to B being on the bottom of the cross and Y being to the left, because that's just the way that Nintendo consoles are. And, you know, there are smart things in the game that make sure to sort of casually suggest where the button is that you should be pushing during quick time events, in physical relation to the other buttons, as opposed to just saying hit the B button, which has been an issue in other Wii U versions of action games that have seen life on other platforms.
Obviously the sort of, thong wearing side boob showing elephant in the room,
right,
is that, put off
sure.
by some of the,
yes.
The sexualization, hyper sexualization, you could say, of the main character Bayonetta. The first question I wanted to ask about that is that obviously, how much of a taste you have for that and how much of that it takes to offend you or what tone of that bothers you is very subjective person
sure.
to person. There are probably people on staff who would say you're being a fuddy-duddy. I don't know.
I would really like to hear them use that word.
But how do you as a reviewer start to make the decision of how much of your own sort of personal taste you are going to bring to a review?
I mean, in accepting the review, I accept that my personal taste is going to be there. Like that's
working what works and what doesn't from it, like a narrative gameplay perspective, you know, that they work
right.
in the traditional sense is different, I think, from saying this, like, I find this morally questionable.
I don't think that there is, because if we look back at some of, if I remember correctly, people that went on to become Platinum were originally part of Clover, which was a studio inside of Capcom. And I believe that Clover was responsible for God Hand. Mm-hmm. God Hand is a game that was reviewed very differently from site to site. And that was in large part a very... very divisive discussion about the game's mechanics. And in some outlets, the mechanics were lauded as exemplary, that they were fantastically customizable in the way that you could play that game and really get into it. And others, they found it clunky and found it non-responsive. And that is a very subjective discussion of game mechanics. And I think that some things in games that we consider obvious, and I say that with air quotes around it, are just subjective matters that more people broadly agree on. And there will invariably be someone that disagrees. I mean, I really like Ninja Gaiden Black as an example to call back to, but there are people for whom Ninja Gaiden Black was unforgivingly difficult, and they think that that makes it not fun. Whereas for me, that difficulty makes it fun because of those mechanics. So to say this is less subjective than that is really just showing where your priorities with regards to subjectivity lie.
Did you find that the fun you had playing the game was impacted by some of these artistic choices?
Sure. And I think that that's a thing that's common in a lot of media for me. For example, if I was watching a stand-up comedian that I thought was really funny, up to the point where he started dropping a bunch of rape jokes, then that would diminish my enjoyment of that piece of work. And it would diminish my sort of assessment of that work, like, in totality. And with regards to Bayonetta 2, I think that there is a incredible core to that game. The mechanics of that game are really, really something. The witch time mechanic is still probably one of, if not my favorite, addition to the character action genre since 2004. I think that it's a really fantastic risk-reward mechanic that encourages creative play and risk-taking. The controls are great.
Let's go on a quick diversion here.
Sure.
Tell me about Witch Time.
So Witch Time is a thing that is activated by hitting the right trigger on the controller right before you take damage from an enemy. And when you invoke Witch Time, it slows the game down and increases the effectiveness of Bayonetta's attacks. So essentially, you enter bullet time when you invoke Witch Time. But to get that advantage, you have to put yourself at risk. You have to wait for enemies to make their attack and dodge at the last second. And as the game progresses and you face more powerful enemies, the window to trigger that that bullet time, that Witch Time, becomes increasingly smaller. It's harder to activate. It takes more skill to use.
So is it kind of like a counter, except instead of a counter attack, the counter is time slows down.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And the attack misses. So you have to increasingly put yourself at more risk for a bigger reward. And a lot of character action games don't really encourage that. Like, you're at risk from enemies all the time because they can attack you. But in something like Devil May Cry or Ninja Gaiden, you're just attacking, rolling away, looking for opportunities. Whereas Bayonetta and Bayonetta 2 both encourage you to really, like, get up in there and take a chance. And the rewards for taking that chance can be, like, really considerable. And the sort of satisfaction, the gameplay reward in that is something that I don't think can be understated. Like, the feeling of success when you essentially trick an enemy into attacking you and avoid it and use that against them is something that no other game in this genre really does.
I don't know if you feel the same way, but when I review a game, there's always a moment and sometimes much longer than a moment where it's pretty nerve-wracking, because, you know, you're putting a review out into the world. I find this especially when I really hate a game or really hate a game that's been marketed, heavily with a lot of hype, I guess you could say, or if I really love a game that is really under the radar, I get kind of nervous that I'm going to be an outlier and attract a lot of attention to myself. I kind of just like to be going with the flow. Good old middle of the road J-man, they call me. Do you get those nerves right before you publish a review?
I'm not so worried about being an outlier because at this point in my career, I've been that a lot. And And so I'm often curious to see what other people think, but when I'm giving a game that I know is highly anticipated a review that is less than positive, or I'm saying something that I know is going to make a specific group of people angry, I absolutely get nervous. Like, I had knots in my stomach before I published this review, because despite the fact that my feelings about the sort of really blatant objectification of Bayonetta and the sort of even more pronounced hypersexualization of her character in many respects, like, even I felt comfortable in that opinion, but I knew that that would be an opinion that not a lot of people were going to elaborate or elucidate on, and that there would be a lot of people really looking forward to Bayonetta who were going to be angry at me pointing that out.
Did you, how do you, as a critic, just as a person living in the world, in a game like this, a lot of people have said that Bayonetta owns her sexuality, that it's something that she is in full control of, that she, the character, is using, and as a result, they're more comfortable with the way she's portrayed. How do you, as a critic, sort of differentiate between a woman who is just sexual and is owning that sexuality and, like, the male gaze and objectification?
I mean, I'll those are two questions, I guess, so I'll take those in two parts. I mean, the first claim that she is using that sexuality, like, on her own, that she owns it, is sort of... it's wrong. Within the first 10 minutes of the game, Bayonetta's clothes are cut off. Just as an example. Not her hair clothes, but just a real dress that she's wearing is cut off by attackers. So that is an example of a way in which she is stripped down to nothing with no input from the player whatsoever. And the second sort of point that I would make is that Bayonetta is not a person. Like, she's not making decisions. First of all, the nudity typically, or the almost nudity, comes into play as a reward for you doing well. So either that's the developers doing it, or it's you doing it to make her clothes fly off. She's not a person making decisions. She is a avatar in a game, and this is the thing that's happening. And it's a reward that the game doesn't really need because of what I was just talking about the mechanics being so satisfying. But also there's the matter of the camera, which is, I mean, clearly not under Bayonetta's control, because it looks at lots of things, including her, and the camera frequently frames Bayonetta as this thing to be stared at, and frequently frames her in such a way that you're supposed to be looking at specific parts of her body, like they're for your benefit or for your sale as a viewer. So I don't agree with the statement that her sexuality is empowering, that she owns her sexuality. Like, you as a player are controlling this character. You own that, if nothing else. And the developers are constantly framing it in a way to present it to you as a product.
I want to talk a little bit about score before I let you go.
Sure.
Which is always, like, kind of a not fun thing for reviewers to talk about. And
fine.
The way we do scores at Polygon is sort of unconventional, is it's something that's sort of agreed upon by a group. A group of people read a review and talk about what they think the score feels like to them,
right,
for our rubric. And it's worth noting, I think, that 7.5 for our rubric is not a terrible score. It's not too bad at all.
No, you would actually only need to look at the reviews carousel on the site to see that 7.5 is an awful lot higher than a lot of games have gotten recently.
So you are also, I would say, not that far off with the 7.5. You're not that far off from the median of a lot of other sites. A lot of them fell in that sort of a little bit safer 8 range. I think it's harder to get mad about an 8. But all
I think
that being
the
said,
average right now is a 91 probably on Metacritic.
Yeah, there's a lot of hundreds though that are jacking that up. I'm saying, like, the bottom end of the medium, like the lower medium. But that, all that being said, when you when the reviews for games start to come out, like Bayonetta, and you're seeing a lot of people just loving it, and you start to see, like, oh man, I think I'm gonna be on the lower end of this one. What does that feel like for you? I mean, is that you have a kind of a pit in your stomach thing, or are you pretty comfortable with it?
I don't necessarily enjoy being the person that's being sort of labeled as crapping on a game. I'm more interested in being honest about my opinion, because that's my job. I think with something like this, I was not surprised that no one else really sort of spoke to the way that sort of over-sexualization affected their experience, because nobody really did last time. And that is what it is. Like, I'm not those people. I cannot speak to, you know, their experience or what they do or don't enjoy. And that's fine. I have to be honest with the text, and I'm lucky in the way that our review system works, in that I wrote the text. Like, I didn't think, well, this has got to be this score. I luckily got to talk to a couple of other people about what the score should be based on the text. And that doesn't mean that I'm sort of shirking responsibility for it, because I, like, as a reviews editor in particular, it's my priority that the text reflects, or the score reflects the text as written.
Speaking of that, I have one more question for you, and mm-hmm. It's shitty. Are you ready?
Please.
If Bayonetta was not in any way objectionable to you, to your tastes, in any way sexualizing its main character, if all that was expunged from the product, what score do you think it would deserve?
Oh, I don't really know. I think that there are some things that I would sort of criticize and call a task that weren't in the review text, if not for that stuff, because that's sort of a pretty solid distraction from any other issues Bayonetta might have. Like, there are some boss fights in that game that are kind of bullshit, and the camera sucks again, just like it did in the first one. And also, in a lot of ways, it's not really doing much different from the original Bayonetta. And for us in particular, when a sequel, especially one that's like 5 years after the release of the original, doesn't move the needle much, it sort of like hurts its assessment on our site. So it would have gotten a higher score. I dislike the discussion around it being, quote, docked points because of that over-sexualization. Games do not start with a 10 and get little, like, nicks taken out of them to find their final score, because we've given games that aren't perfect 10s on Polygon, and we've given games that, in my opinion, are incredibly sophisticated sort of synthesis of everything a series has ever done right, like an 8.5, like something like Splinter Cell Blacklist, because it's not moving the needle. It's just like sharpening and refining that needle.
If you take nothing else away from Quality Control, please remember that a 10 is not a perfect score. There's no, it is simply the strongest recommendation we can make. It isn't, there is no such thing as a perfect score.
That should be on the album art for the podcast.
Arthur Keys, thank you so much for joining me here on the program. If you have enjoyed listening, we'd sure appreciate it if you go to iTunes, leave us a review or a rating. That would just be the tops, and maybe recommend us to a friend. Say, hey, you like video games, I like video games, let's talk about this podcast, Quality Control. It's on iTunes, and it's lots of other places too. So thank you for listening, and thank you to you, Arthur, for joining us. If you have questions about games that are in the pipeline that you want answered, email qualitycontrol@polygon.com. We'll be with you whenever there's another game to talk about. Until then, for Arthur Geese, I'm Justin McElroy, and thank you for listening to Polygon's Quality Control.